That package that was written up in the Brundtland Commission report, that package said that if we can control, we, meaning the UN or the local government, can control property, infrastructure, and food, then we're going to be able to save our planet. And by the way, we have a name for that. That's called sustainable development.
Hey everybody, Alex Newman here with Conversations That Matter. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are with the New American Magazine, and we have a very special guest today. They are working to expose Agenda 21 and global sustainable development policies as they affect my beautiful hometown, Miami, Florida. So we have Maria Magdalena Estupinan. She was born in Cuba, so she has some firsthand experience with the horrors of communism and totalitarianism and too much government and restrictions on private property. In fact, she's the daughter of a man who always fought for the poor. He ran for the Senate in Cuba and always strongly believed that you need to follow your conscience. Maria spent many years in real estate and land development, in particular in South Florida, and she now dedicates most of her time to fighting Agenda 21 and globalism. Also with us, we have John Anthony. He's the founder of Sustainable Freedom Lab. He's also a nationally recognized speaker, researcher, writer. He is a leading expert on the effects of global and federal sustainable development policies, and especially the effect on individual property rights. He does a workshop called Shattering America's Trance, teaching conservatives how to engage in cross-political communications and how to resist this escalating madness. Thank you both so much for joining us. And so let's start with the basics for people who aren't really familiar. What is Agenda 21? What could possibly be wrong with developing in a sustainable manner?
So let me just say why we started this and the idea behind it. It's, I think, like I mentioned the last time that I was on, the problem with Agenda 21 is that it's one of the greatest threats that we're facing right now. And then people are going to say, well, hold on just 1 minute. Why Agenda 21? Well, Agenda 21 is a blueprint of everything that is happening in the world today. COVID, the Great Reset, the Build Back Better, everything. And another danger that it's with Agenda 21 is that people don't know about it. So therefore, if you don't know something, you're not going to find it. So that is what we are trying to bring this awareness and like an explosion, okay, in Miami-Dade. So what is the goal of Agenda 21? It's total control of our lives and, of course, global governance. So based on that, I reached out to John Anthony and said, you know what? We have to do something about this. Why don't you do like a forensic study so people can connect the dots and see how Agenda 21 is tied up to everything that is happening right now?
Excellent. And before we get to John, Maria, I'm wondering, how did you first come across this? I mean, what was it in Miami that caught your attention and you said, I have to focus on this? What does Agenda 21 look like in Miami?
Well, funny enough, way, way back when I used to do land development, I remember that we wanted to build some, I don't know how many houses, 50, 60. And I remember sitting down with the lawyer and the architect, and they said, they were trying to explain why we couldn't do that. And I said, but what is the problem? And he said, something about 21. So that goes back so far, you know, that has been bringing so many problems throughout. What can you do? What can you do with the land, property rights, everything else? So I started getting involved in Coral Gables with the commissioners and the mayors because we were losing our property rights. We were losing them. And they were doing whatever they wanted. It doesn't matter. They needed something to be done because of sustainable development. Then they changed the zoning zonifications. You know, I mean, it was awful. So that's how I got involved in that.
Very good. Thank you, Maria. And so, John, You've been working on this for a long time. Now you're taking a close look at Miami. And, you know, I have a question for you. You know, what is the problem with Agenda 21 and sustainable development? Because a lot of sensible people look at this and say, well, why wouldn't we want to conserve? Why wouldn't we want to have, you know, green spaces and wildlife corridors and things like that? What's the real problem with these ideas that are, of course, coming from the UN down through the federal government?
Yeah, well, thank you. And Maria, thanks for asking me. You've done a phenomenal job with Miami. And Alex, thanks for having me on here. What's the problem with this? Well, you know, it's like any propaganda. If you give just a little bit of truth wrapped up in a nice package, it all sounds good. But when you dig beneath the layers, you see something different. Miami has this comprehensive development master plan. And when you look at their master plan and you compare it, let's say, to Seattle, to Portland, to Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, San Jose, California, they all end up the same place. The packaging may be just a little bit differently to allow for the different geography, but essentially the plans are all the same. And they'll talk about climate change and sea level rise, particularly in Miami, sea level rise. They'll talk about efficiency and equity. All of these are in the comprehensive master plan, which I had a chance to run through. What happens is, though, to look what the plan is really going to look like, you have to follow the money upstream, because essentially we have this gigantic funnel, and it funnels money from the federal government all the way down to your local community. And that funnel, that money, comes with strings attached to it. And when you see what the strings are, then you begin to realize, well, this is what my community is going to look like when we're all done with this thing. So if you dive into the master plan, Miami-Dade is divided into, I believe it's 34 different incorporated municipalities and one large unincorporated municipality. Well, the plan says in clear English, you get to keep your power. You get to decide what you want to do. Everything you want to do, you're autonomous. Each of those local communities or municipalities is allowed to do that. Take it to the next paragraph where it says, as long as you meet minimum standards. And that's where the catch comes in. The very first minimum standard they establish are growth boundaries. Well, what the heck are these growth boundaries? You know, when are they a good? Are they a bad thing? Well, essentially, growth boundaries, you kind of draw this geographical circle around a community and you say, well, inside the growth boundary, this is what housing is going to look like. Outside of it, it's going to look a little bit different. And that containment, the whole purpose of it, is to begin to densify the area. And when you understand where that growth boundary concept came from, the densification came from, then you'll understand exactly what's happening with the United Nations and with your local community here down in Miami-Dade. In 1976, the Vancouver Declaration was signed off on by the United States of America. The guy named William O'Reilly, if I'm not mistaken, was the fellow that signed off on that. And here's what he said. I'm going to read a section of this. This is right from the agreement that the United States agreed to. Private land ownership is a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore contributes to social injustice. If it's not checked, it may become a major obstacle in planning and implementation of development schemes. So all of a sudden, private property becomes a problem. Now, that document goes on further, and it says that we have to establish boundaries, not just boundaries to where you're going to live and how you're going to live, but also boundaries to the rights that you have over the different properties and so forth. So now we're beginning to be bound up by this agreement. Well, we signed off on that. 10 years later, we asked for a report. The United Nations asked for a report to be done on that. I think it was called the Brundtland Report. And in there, they said, well, we've got an environmental problem in the world. And they said the environmental problem is caused by poverty, but what's causing the poverty is the uneven distribution of wealth throughout the world. So we need to take the wealth from the wealthy people and transfer it down to the less wealthy people or the poverty-stricken nations and poverty-stricken peoples. Now, that wealth, much of it is tied up in land. So now we're beginning to find how land is really the key to sustainable development. That package that was written up in the Brundtland Commission report, that package said that if we can control, we, meaning the UN or the local government, can control property, infrastructure, and food, then we're going to be able to save our planet. And by the way, we have a name for that. That's called sustainable development. So that sustainable development becomes the basis for virtually every single plan that happens in the United States. When you hear the term sustainable development, you think of, well, maybe we'll put, you know, bamboo shutters on the house. We're going to build a house that's going to last for a real long time and it's sustainable. That's not really what it is. It's about protecting that property from you, the homeowner. And we're going to do that by passing different regulations and different proposals, regulations, zoning, and coding to limit the amount of property that each individual owner has.
Pretty incredible. Folks, we're going to go to break real quick. And when we get back, we'll hear more from Maria and John about what's going on in Miami and around the country. Stay tuned. John, before we went to break, you were talking about the UN and the sustainable development war on private property, private land ownership. What is the end game? I mean, suppose these people are able to steamroller over the opposition. What does sustainable development look like worldwide? What does it look like in Miami? Why should we be concerned?
Control of private property. The end game of sustainable development is really to equalize wealth by controlling property, because property is a means of accumulating wealth, as I've already said. So they've done this through various programs. When you get money into a local community, that money is generally, for planning purposes, it's generally coming from the Environmental Protection Agency, coming from HUD, coming from the Department of Transportation. All of this money filters down with strings attached to it. And those strings are defined in a way that they implement the sustainable development goals. I think now there's 17. We have 17 sustainable development goals. So the history of that is, we talked about that Brundtland report that came out in 87. Well, in 1992, we had this Earth Summit, and that's the Agenda 21 document that Maria was talking about. Actually, several documents that were signed off again by the United States. So we agreed that this property control is something that is very important if we're going to advance sustainable development. In 2015, they went one step further. They created the 17 sustainable development goals. And those 17 sustainable development goals apply not just in the United States, but they apply globally. And they're operationalized through things like Build Back Better. You know, we hear the Build Back Better program and we think, oh, this must have been something President Biden came up with. Actually, no, there's a Build Back Better UK, Build Back Better Kenya. World Economic Forum has a Build Back Better Action Plan. There's a Build Back Better United Nations. So all over the world, the same plan is being implemented. Here in the United States, we know what this is going to look like because other communities have already taken money from the federal government. Now, Build Back Better, it's important to understand, is only one method of getting that money to you. The infrastructure plan actually has components of Build Back Better, and the CARES Act has it in there. The so-called Inflation Reduction Act has it in there. All these monies come into local community, as I said, with these strings attached. So we know what Miami's going to look like when they get done. If you go back to Portland, Oregon, in 1979, they already started a program of urban growth boundaries to accomplish a couple of things. Number one, they wanted to be sure they had diversification in the community, but they also wanted to make better land use. And when I say make better land use, what they really mean is we want to limit the amount of property ownership that each person can have. So that's what you're looking at in Miami. Now, we flip back over to Seattle or Portland. They're very similar. Even San Jose is very similar. When the urban growth boundaries were implemented, along came smart growth. With all of that, what happened was the housing prices skyrocketed. And the way they did it, and it's pretty much universal, they limited the amount of land that each homeowner could have. So if you have a piece of property, let's say it's 3/4 of an acre and one family lives on there, well, they just pass a new regulation that says, well, if you have 3/4 of an acre of property, 5 families have to live there. Or 6 or 10 families. So that leads to this densification. All of a sudden we have smaller homes, we have apartments, we have high density building. And very often that goes right near transit hubs. So we're gonna put a high speed rail through there too. Now, if this all sounds familiar, it's because it's happening in Houston, it's happening in Atlanta, Georgia, it's happening virtually every major city in the United States that gets involved. Well, what will my lifestyle look like? So if we allow this to happen, well, again, we know, we don't have to guess about it. If you take Los Angeles, let's say, or Portland, Oregon, in Portland, whereas most of the people lived inside the city and they lived fairly comfortably because homes were affordable. By the time you got to the 1980s, people were being priced out of their own homes and they had to move beyond that growth boundary. Remember, there's a boundary that says, well, this is what it's going to look like inside the city. Well, people were hopping over that boundary and going to Salem and Cavillis, and they created traffic jams getting up and down I-5 because they had to get back to work in the morning. So whatever traffic jams you have in Miami-Dade right now, look for them to multiply. In fact, there's been a 67% increase in what they call super commuters between 2005 and 2019 in Portland, because all these people now can't afford to live in the city any longer. So what does the city do about it? They'll extend the boundary a little bit, but they'll really tighten up on the number of people that can live in each of these different segments. So if it's an acre, maybe now you need 10 or 15 people living in the acre. So as that begins to increase, we're getting rid of private property. Now, let me give you an idea how that works. I've got a piece of land, it's an acre, I've got my house on, zoning law comes along, zoning regulations come along, by an unelected board, by the way, they pass these regulations. Well, why do they pass regulations that compromise property? Because those are the strings that are attached to the money that they got. They have to do that, otherwise they don't get the cash. So with the cash now, as new housing is built, they can no longer have one person on that piece of property, now they have five or six. Now watch individually what's happened. Property is rightly a way to accumulate wealth. I get more money in my pocket. That's a good thing. But if that property isn't allowed to grow organically and naturally in response to market forces, then it may not go up in value. Or I sell my property off so I can go live in one of those high dense developments near the transit center. And then the city takes the property over and they put a public park there, or they put a nice, beautiful playground for children to play at. And all these sound like wonderful things, but we're swapping off valuable property for less valuable public property.
Yep. We've only got a few minutes left. I want to ask about now you guys' plan to combat this in Miami. Maria, I know you're trying to raise some money to launch a counterattack against this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you guys are planning for Miami and how people can get involved?
Okay, so I set up a Give and Go fundraising campaign, and it's called USA Against Agenda 21. Hopefully with that, we're going to finish our work and we're going to be facing our representatives and going public with it.
Very good. And so, John, what's the plan of counterattack here? How do you push this back at the local level in Miami?
We need to take the information that we have about what Miami is going to look like and get that in the hands of the public. Because in most cases, the public has no idea what's going to happen because everything sounds great. So the public needs to know. And then we also have to get our local officials, win some officials over so they understand the interests of the individual people in the city have to come before some global movement. So those are two areas that we'd have to be working on, informing people and going after those public officials, replacing them when necessary.
And so you talk about different communication strategies for trying to explain this to the public. We've got less than 2 minutes left, but tell us a little bit about your workshop, Shattering America's Trance, and how conservatives can effectively communicate on these issues.
Well, we want to set up workshops down in Miami where actually community members will be able to come around. And it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, where you come from, but you'll be able to come to one spot and say, this is my property. This is what's going to happen to it. Well, it's not just my property today. This is the potential I have for the future. When people move to a new location, they move there because they want hope. They want plans for tomorrow. Well, these programs, these master development plans, they take that hope and opportunity away and they put it in the hands of a public official to decide what the future is going to look like. So we'll run workshops for people. We're going to put videos together for local people, do online, all that it takes to get the message in front of Miamians and Dade Countyans so they understand you need to have some control over what's going on. Otherwise, you're not going to have the future that you hoped you would have.
That's right. And remember, we need to do two things. Pray a lot. And get involved.
Absolutely.
Prayer is important.
Yep. Yes. Well, and I know you guys are working with some phenomenal people down in Miami. It's my old stomping ground. So thank you guys for what you're doing. I hope many people will get involved, and hopefully this is a model that can be replicated in great cities all across the nation. John Anthony, founder of the Sustainable Freedom Lab, and also Maria Magdalena Estupinan. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for all that you are doing. I hope people will go check it out. It's USA Against Agenda 21 on Give, Send, Go. And folks out there, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Alex Newman with Conversations That Matter. Until next time, God bless you all.